thank you all for coming here. It's wonderful to see such a big audience for a math talk. this is a list of mostly mathematicians. So I just want to find out how many people here are mathematicians or related to math or and how many people are not? Okay, so there's a fair people that we're going to work with, so we have both sides represented here. And today we are really delighted to have some wonderful non-mathematicians here who are gonna really help us see the interaction between math and art, between math and theater, really. So with me today is Aaron Weaver, who is playing Thomasina Coverley in the new production by the Folger of the play Arcadia. And the whole play basically revolves, in one way or the other, about what Thomasina knew or didn't know what she was doing, as we will find out today. And just to tell you a little bit more about Erin, she's acted at various productions in the Folger and other theater companies like the Two Rivers Theater Company, Roundhouse Theater, Arden Theater Company, and also on the national tour of Les Miserables. She has had 4 Barrymore Award nominations, and it says you're doing your master's in theater education at NYU. So please welcome Aaron Weaver. And the other person on our panel is Michelle Oshiro, and she is actually a fellow professor at UMBC at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County with me. And Michelle actually contacted me some months back and asked me if I wanted to be a mathematical consultant on this play, and of course I just was overjoyed. She was very hesitant and all, could you, and I just said, absolutely. This is the kind of opportunity that mathematicians pray for, they'll have an audience, so. This is just nirvana. But Michelle is the director of the Humanities Scholar Program at UMBC. She's the associate director of the Brescher Center for the Humanities there. And she's also the resident dramaturge at the Folger Theater. And I think Michelle will tell us exactly what that involves. And she's currently doing a wide number of research. Her own research, one of the things that she's doing is she's researching contemporary American productions of Shakespeare's problem plays. So that sounds very interesting, too. What I'm going to do is to set the ball rolling. I'm going to show you, and Michelle suggested I start with this, something that actually is a little excerpt from a different talk that I gave that's on YouTube. It's called The Mathematics of Fiction, and it looks at math and fiction and what's the relation between it. But I want to show you just a slide from that, an excerpt. The question is, here's a play and here's a book, Uncle Petros and Golubov's Injector. You have 2 movies, Pi and A Beautiful Mind. And the question is, why is this doing that? Well, so I guess we have to look at that one before. Supposedly. Do you know why this is doing that? No
idea. We need some stick to
But anyway, let's look at that one. And what I'm asking is, what is common in all these stories? Exactly. So, and that, unfortunately, is what you see in Hollywood, that anytime there's a mathematician, he's going to go crazy. In fact, there's a rule by Chekhov that said that if there's a gun in a play, it has to go off in the 3rd act. And there's a corollary which says basically that if there's a mathematician in a story, he has to go mad. And this is a little bit like, there's been a book out called The Celluloid Closet, which says anytime there's a gay character in a movie, he has to die. Well, this is sort of like a calculus closet that mathematicians call that. So I thought we'd just start with talking about that a bit. And what's with this play Arcadia? Does the mathematician go mad in it?
Well, I don't know. First of all, there's a number of mathematicians in the play, and we're not assuming that this crowd has seen the play already, though we hope you will. May I ask how many of you have seen the production? Oh, yay! Tell all your friends. Okay, for those of you who are
actually,
not...
I'll just pass these out, because this is... Same
kind of opportunity.
Yeah, we might have to stand because I don't think people can see. They can't see you and
oh, yeah. Okay, sure.
Fully stand if you want us to see you and hear you.
Definitely the latter. For those who are not familiar with the play, let me deal with sort of a 2-second synopsis. Essentially, Arcadia makes you think of Virgil's epilogue, the ideal pastoral. It's not a pastoral play, but the Arcadia in this play is an English country poem called Sidley Park. And the action of the play flips between two time periods, the early 19th century and what we're showing as the present day at Sidley Park in this English country town. And what we're watching are these two periods essentially trying to understand one another. In the present day, we have scholars who are actively researching what happened in a very short span of time in the early 19th century. And then in the 19th century, what we see are characters anticipating mathematical and scientific discoveries in our time. And that anticipation is happening primarily through the character of Thomasina, brilliantly played by her author, and her tutor, Septimus Hodge. What's very clear is that Sidley Park, in both worlds, is a place of learning, it is a place of family, and it's a place of human relationships. Stoppard has a reputation for being very intellectual. I think this is absolutely the most human of his plays. So that said, we have a number of mathematicians in the play. We have the young Thomasina in the early 19th century, and then there's a mathematician in the present day, his name is Valentine. I do not think that mathematics is associated with insanity. Instead, it is associated with mystery and wonder and intellectual curiosity, and also, in a really beautiful, surprising way, with love and with real human affection. Now, that's not to say that there isn't a discussion of insanity. That's not to say that there isn't a character that's reputed to have gone insane. But one of the things we see happen here are the difficulties of understanding different worlds. So we see these modern academics trying to understand what happened in the past, and we see how deeply flawed their conclusions are because we're privileged to have seen the earlier world. So while there is a sort of rumor of insanity, as an audience, we see all of the very complicated reasons that might be, and it's not just because he liked math. So that's my answer.
and yet, if we just take, forget about this play, but let's look at other representations that are on the board, on the screen, and think about proof, since we're talking about theater and mathematics. That certainly has a lot of insanity in it, doesn't it?
Proof? Oh, yeah.
Okay.
On a number of levels.
On a number of levels. I mean, the whole premise of that play is, okay, the father was a mathematician, and he went crazy, and the daughter, is she also going to go crazy, or has she gone crazy already? I mean, that was the suspense and the proof. So, what do you think?
She's also a mathematician.
She's also a mathematician, absolutely. So, what is this fascination of, why is there this connection between mathematicians and people going crazy? I mean, do we need an anti-defamation league? I mean, what do we have to do to convince people in the arts to stop portraying us like that?
I don't know.
I'm trying to get you both to brainwave with me so that brainstorm with me so that you can tell us what
totally
to do.
Well, as a non-mathematics person, and I'm going to be completely candid here, I was always afraid of math. And I don't know if it's because I grew up in the 70s and girls did one thing and boys did another, but I was in fear of math. So when I see beautiful minds at plays like Proof, I believe the insanity because I think to think about something so, it's an adjective.
Abstract.
Although I deal in the abstract as an artist too. But I would... No, I don't think it's arcane, but for lack of a better word, really, really hard. That could send you over the edge. So in other words, it's my own insecurities that let me buy that thought, because I know that I couldn't do it, or I feel like I couldn't do it. Although a couple of weeks with Camille and I'm ready to change my major. Do you have thoughts on this insanity and math?
stuff?
Well, to be honest, I mean, I don't think I, until this moment, thought about it in that way, which I mean, maybe is a good thing, that the movies haven't completely bogged my mind down to being all due to insanity. But one of the things that I love about playing Thomasina is that she seems to not be insane at all. In fact, what's so wonderful about her is that she's in love with the arts and in love with nature. And one of the things that Eric Posner, who's the director, one of the things that he talked to me about was how I'm very much a tomboy, and I wanted to bring that into the role. And I thought, well, I don't know, does that fit the period? Does that fit with that little girl, how she would behave? And he said, you know, we separate the idea that, you know, when you're in high school, you're either a jock or you're, you know, a nerd, or you're all these things. If you're physical, then you're really physical, but you're a little stupid. And if you're really, really smart, you're not that physical, right? We sort of divide people into these stereotypes. And he said, I think in that time period, especially, going back even further, you know, mathematics and knowledge was very much connected to nature and being connected to life and being a physical person. I loved that idea. So I loved, and you know, Thomasina is, you know, she's in love with the romantic idea and with Lord Byron, and she's in love with, you know, she thinks that the Mr. Noakes landscape idea, this whole idea of this romantic landscape and these ruins, and I just think that she's in love with love and romance, and she's not just sort of this person who sits here like this and just has this big brain. And so this character is a combination of all of these things. I think there's an argument to be made in the play about that there's two characters that, and we'll get into this a little bit, that live these sort of this one-track mind. They believe this thing, and they're not a fan of the other. And I think Thomasina holds both in her hand, which is why she's capable of coming up with such amazing ideas, is that she's not one or the other, but she embraces all of it. And I wish as a child I grew up that way, not thinking that math was something that I didn't do because I was more into the arts. I wish that I'd read this play when I was a child and realized that the arts can illuminate the math, and vice versa. So I think it's a shame that we're raised that way, to think that it is one or the other, subconsciously, consciously, and that this character is not. She's all of it.
She's like 15.
She starts. Thomasina starts at 13, and then in the second act, you get to meet her at 16. She's actually 13 years and 10 months, and then she's 16 years and 11 months and 3 weeks.
So I was just wondering if there are any other plays you've seen, or other works that you've seen, or maybe people in the audience have, that, you know, have this same kind of balanced portrayal of mathematicians or mathematics. I mean, there's a lot of proof. Well, yeah, that's one, I guess. But I guess there's numbers.
I'd like to argue that proof is not, that he is not myth. My husband's a brilliant scientist, and he has dementia. And I go every day for 2 years. He can no longer write his name. He has 300 publications. He has the highest award from his society. And that part of his life is closed. And he went through that same stage. I don't consider it madness.
I think maybe what I really meant was about the daughter. One of the big dramatic things in the play is whether the daughter is, you know, disturbed enough, whether she could have actually written the proof herself.
But that's a power quality.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
But it's still what the. But anyway, let's go on to more positive. Yes. You
well, in a way, I think a beautiful mind is not one of those three, one of those four. Really, it's kind of different because it's biographical, and the person really was psychotic.
Right. I mean, right.
It just happened to be the way it was. He was also very mathematician.
I guess I was a little disappointed with A Beautiful Mind, just because I kept waiting for that 1 minute that they could have spent on saying something about the mathematics. And I'm sure they must have shot it, but they must have, you know, the ruthlessness of editing, they must have said, okay, it's better not to alarm the audience with this. That's what I suspect.
Well, that's one of the things I actually love about Stoffer's play. Stauffer does make very clear the sort of thing that Aaron is talking about, that math is not separated from nature or art or humanity or love in this play. In fact, it's the core of it. And Valentine expresses that beautifully. He talks about, you know, this notion of mystery with mathematics. And I think that that's addressed sort of indirectly in some of the films that you mentioned, but it is an absolute topic of conversation in this play.
And also, just to add to that, I think it's interesting because we say they're mad, but I think the moral of some of these stories, or at least the not the moral, but what we find out definitely in Arcadia is that it's not madness. It's just that we call it madness because we don't understand. So it looks mad to us, but it's actually quite sane. And I think it's not a matter of being mad. It's a matter of being lonely and not being able to articulate this information to people. And so you appear mad, or we tell you it's mad because it's easier than sitting you down and trying to figure it out or more.
It just reminds me, there's a number of times where the Lady Croom, Thomasina's mother, walks into the room and she'll be talking about her work. And Lady Croom will just turn to the tutor and say, "Do you understand her?"
Yeah.
To show her distinction from that world. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
But it is very much a comic moment. And I think it's a comic moment because we as an audience do understand her. We get to be privileged with Thomasina for the duration of this play.
I'm wondering if we should, yes.
I think it's not an accident that she, at one point, she falls in love with Lord Byron. I think she's in love with
him. Exactly. It's certainly.
Yeah. Because in real life, Byron did marry a superb mathematician. Yeah. She was great, Lord Byron's actual wife. Now, the marriage didn't work out too well.
Right.
but in fact, marrying the arts and the math, I'm sure Stauffer knew about that marriage. Yeah. So I think there's a possibility.
She's in love with the idea of him, his poetry, the waltz, the landscape, you know, this new landscaping idea of ruins, and you know, she's in love with all of those things. Wash is still equally in love with math. It's so great.
And you're right, it does come together there because all the romantics were interested in nature in that way, and also interested at the same time with the beginnings of botany and nature and describing them in the way you describe the fractals. And,
yeah, I was wondering, maybe we should have a little reading of people who haven't seen the play. Actually, one of the mathematics professors from Ashford, to tell one you were thinking of reading. So.
Well, we've got a couple, so I don't know if there's, if you want to go for a second. We did a lot of work on the accent, but we hope it passes with Americans, but after a while. So it's on page 37. And do you want to read these with me?
Sure, I'm gonna pretend I'm an actor and be the tutor.
Oh, but Michelle is an actor. You have actually been an actor in their production.
Okay. I don't really need to read the script.
No, you don't.
Actually. Yeah, I'm off book. So. And I'll just to set the context of this moment, she's with her tutor, Septimus, and she's had this mathematical discovery that she gives to him, and he gives her a negative, you know, gives her an alpha minus, and she's sort of arguing that. I think she's also at the top of the scene trying to get his attention, and she's poked and prodded him a little bit. Her mother is in love with Lord Byron, and he's in love with her mother, and she's aware of all of this, and she has a fondness for him, and our assistant director described it this way. She often said Thomasina tries to get him to shine his light on her all the time. She's always wanting his attention. And this is one of those moments where he's so involved with love, and that so bothers her. She wants her to connect with him with the love of math. So that's that moment, and great. So I just got the notebook. Correct. What is incorrect in it? Alpha minus? What is the minus for?
For doing more than was asked.
You do not like my discovery.
A fancy is not a discovery.
A jibe is not a rebuttal. You are churlish with me because Mama's paying attention to your friend. Well, let them alone. They cannot turn back the advancement of knowledge. I think it is an excellent discovery. Each week I plot your equations, dot for dot, the X's against Y's, and all manner of algebraical relation. And every week they draw themselves as commonplace geometry, as if the world of forms was nothing but arcs and angles. God's truth, Septimus. If there is an equation for a curve like a bell, then there must be an equation for one like a bluebell. And if a bluebell, why not a rose? Do we believe nature is written in numbers?
We do.
Then why do your equations only describe the shapes of manufacture?
I do not know.
And thus, God could only make a cabinet.
He has a mastery of equations which lead into infinities where we cannot follow.
What a faint heart! We must work outward from the middle of the maze. We will start with something simple. I will plot this leap and deduce its equation. You will be famous for being my tutor when Lord Byron is dead and forgotten.
Bunch of other things, and then go to that. I'm going to sit here. It's a little... I don't like me.
No, it's just... So we can do... I can read the icons in properly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Great. And so, okay, so this...
sure. So Thomasine is now on a quest to deduce the plot of this apple leaf that she's picked out. And what we discover in the present day is that the academics have found this old textbook and they're reading a bit of marginalia that Thomasina has penciled in. And so the marginalia reads as...
Actually, should I set up the joke, or
make sure you come see the play. That's right. We can't give you all the juiciest parts.
I think they right. know from last class.
You're right. And the joke with the margin.
Yeah, they don't know about it.
I don't get it.
Sorry. I, Thomasina Cupperley, have found a truly wonderful method whereby all the forms of nature must give up their numerical secrets and draw themselves through number alone. This margin being too mean for my purpose, the reader must look elsewhere for a new geometry of irregular forms discovered by Thomasina Cupperley.
So the present-day academic, Hannah Jarvis, is thrilled that there's this 13-year-old girl in Derbyshire in 1809 who is deducing all of these equations, and she's determined to find out what this bit of marginalia and this notebook full of equations means. And she solicits the assistance of a graduate student in mathematics who's at Oxford, his name is Valentine, to figure this out. And Erin's kind of going to read some of Valentine's bits too, because it's some of the modern mathematics. Now the first... Oh, and I guess I'll set it up a little bit further.
Sure.
He explains that some of the equations he sees are actually very similar to the work that he himself is doing. And this is, if you've been a graduate student, you don't want to think that a 13-year-old is
so, a 13-year-old in 1809.
And a girl.
And a girl.
So he's explaining why some of this is surprising. We're actually going to do two of Valentine's bits, and here's the first one.
When your Thomasina was, and I'll do it without the accent, because this is not marvel. When your Thomasina was doing mass, it had been the same mass for a couple of thousand years, classical, and for a century after Thomasina. Then mass left the real world behind, just like modern art, really. Nature was classical, mass was suddenly Picasso's. But now nature is having the last laugh. The freaky stuff is turning out to be the mathematics of the natural world.
Great. And because the modern Hannah, the modern academic, is so keen to find out what Hannah's doing, and because Stoppard so brilliantly gives us these parallels between worlds, she grabs an apple leaf and says, "So, could you, like, deduce the plot of an apple leaf, maybe?" And Valentine explains how that would be possible.
Go behind your chair.
Oh, whoops.
Oh, perfect.
Thank you.
I'll just say one other thing that before this, there's a long exposition that Valentine reads out explaining that what she'd been doing was something called an iterated algorithm. And so he actually explains that you put in an X and you get out a Y, you use that again as your X and get out a Y. And I'll just be explaining a little bit more about that later once you finish.
If you knew the algorithm and fed it back, say, 10,000 times, each time there'd be a dot somewhere on the screen. You'd never know where to expect the next dot. But gradually, you'd start to see the shape, because every dot will be inside the shape of this leaf. It wouldn't be a leaf, it would be a mathematical object. But yes, the unpredictable and the predetermined unfold together to make everything the way it is. It's how nature creates itself on every scale, the snowflake and the snowstorm. It makes me so happy to be at the beginning again, knowing almost nothing. People were talking about the end of physics. Relativity and quantum looked as if they were going to clean out the whole problem. Between them, a theory of everything. But they only explain the very big and the very small. The universe, the elementary particles. The ordinary size stuff, which is our lives, the things people write poetry about. Clouds, daffodils, waterfalls. And what happens in a cup of coffee when the green goes in, these things are full of mystery. As mysterious to us as the heavens were to the Greeks. We're better at predicting events at the edge of the galaxy or inside the nucleus of an atom than whether it'll rain on Auntie's garden party 3 Sundays from now. Because the problem turns out to be different. We can't even predict the next drip from a dripping tap when it gets irregular. Each drip sets up the condition for the next. The smallest variation blows prediction apart. And the weather is unpredictable the same way. Will always be unpredictable. When you push the numbers through the computer, you can see it on the screen. The future is disordered. A door like this has cracked open 5 or 6 times since we got up on our hind legs. It's the best possible time to be alive, when almost everything you thought you knew is wrong. Should I read Burner?
Okay.
We're going to
so,
see some now.
Yeah, so what I thought I'd do is I'll actually show you a little bit of the talk that I've been given at the Folger, just to explain the math behind some of the things that Valentine says and some of the things that Thomasina has been doing. And we've already seen that, you know, we heard about Fermat's last theorem. So this is all on the web. If you look on YouTube, you can just see this. It's called Marcadia. I'll just go through this. I think we all know about this. So there's a reference to that several times in the play. Iterated algorithm, that's something that is actually quite easy to see what it means graphically. And so I just made up something that shows a graphical iterated algorithm. So what Thomasina has been doing is she's been writing these things in her notebook. And what is an iterated algorithm? An example would be something where you have something in the left box, and you have some rule for reproducing certain copies of it in the right box. So this rule is very simple: reproduce 3 copies of the pattern on the left in the box on the right, and that's just 1, 2, and 3. And so you have an input and an output, and what you do in an iterated algorithm is you take the output and put it as your new input. So those 3 boxes are now on the left side. They're the new input. And now what I'm going to do is I'm going to apply the rule again. And what I'll get is I'll get the same thing repeated here, here, and here. So it's the same rule, just taking that image and making 3 copies of it. Now the interesting thing is if I keep doing this, something very interesting emerges. And that's one of the things that much later Valentine discovers when he's looking at Thomasina's notebooks. And many of you must have seen this before, but what emerges is, if you keep repeating this, you get a nice pattern. And you get Sierpinski's triangle. And this, of course, is an example of a fractal. This is something that you would have to repeat an infinite number of times before you actually got the mathematical entity that is called Sierpinski's triangle. But for our eyeball norm, if you're just looking at it, doing it about 3 or 4 times is enough. And this is the same image that's just been changed a little bit. It's just being translated and extended in one direction. And there are two things related to this that are very interesting, which come up later in the representations that Valentine talks about.